Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing. Why you should think twice about getting any form of tattoo. You could end up with hepatitis. How's that possible? I'll go into details. Also today, new depression data from plants. They've been reported at the University of Florida to have very healing properties. And that means a lot of people should be considering the nutrients in plants instead of the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Want to help yourself with tooth decay? There's an oil that you can put in your mouth that works, and that's new information. And also, cows fed flaxseed produce more nutritious dairy products, according to Oregon State University. I'll give you the latest on that. And also, we're going to talk about prostate cancer. They thrive. They absolutely love what? Now I'll get into that. And also, for those of you who were afraid of using folic acid in higher doses because they have an association with cancer, don't worry. I'll look at all the data in 13 clinical studies and 50,000 people found no association with cancer and folic acid, even in higher doses. If you're an older person and you have trouble sleeping, well, that's going to affect your memories. So we're going to give you the latest on those areas. Then from our environmental segment, a commentary from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research. This is a really good one. Also, I read a report that really surprised me. It's how scary America is becoming. And this is from San Diego. It's from the Salem News, Tony Simeni out there, about a woman. And what happened to her? And you're not going to believe this, but it was all caught on film. Just a regular woman. And how the local police turned her life into a nightmare, and how it could happen to anyone. We have a lot to share, and if time permits today, I'm going to give some compelling evidence that until such time that we as a nation are willing to look at all of the contributing factors to the homicides that are occurring, not just gun control by itself, but everything else, then we're doing everyone a disservice. I'll show you why we should put right up front the epidemic of homicide violence that is driven by psychiatric medications. I have a great deal of details on that. Let's begin. First up, more and more people are getting tattoos. The latest researcher on this has found, this is from New York University, Langone Medical Center, that you could get hepatitis B. You're 400% more likely to get hepatitis B if you get a tattoo. Why? And because, quote, tattooing in and of itself may pose a risk of the disease that can lay dormant for many, many years. Millions of Americans have hepatitis C, and that's according to the CDC. They think it may be because of the ink. That's correct. That the ink itself and how the ink is constructed could be the point that is allowing the hepatitis into the body. So just keep that in mind. Wouldn't suggest it. And there are other ways of getting hepatitis C, of course, but that's when you got that many people who are getting tattoos who have it, that's not cool. Now, we're always looking for natural ways of dealing with depression. I am absolutely completely opposed to any antipsychotic or antidepressant medication. I have studied the material in depth. And for a documentary that I did, and also a major book coming out. And they do not have any good science on their side. Instead, a sugar pill works equally as well as their most popular antidepressant. But the sugar pill doesn't create suicidal ideations. The tranquilizer does. So I was impressed to see that there is new information, and this is from Orthodox Science. This is from NewsRx, which goes to the pharmaceutical industry. Here's what it says. From Pain and Central Nervous System Week, this is a little technical, but then I'll break it into lay language. It says, the news reporters obtained a quote from the research from the University of Florida, quote, structurally similar polyphenolics such as curcumin, resveratrol, and proanthocyanidins exhibit antioxidant and immune modulatory properties, and in recent research suggests they also modulate the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis activity and serotonergic transmission in hippocampal neurogenesis. And these data tempt speculation that polyphenolic compounds could also combat age-related cognitive decline, which is often accompanied by depression and potentially by reduced levels of hippocampal neurogenesis. Now, in lay language, what does this mean? It means that when you take in curcumin from turmeric or resveratrol from eating grapes or cherries or a glass of red wine or a glass of grape juice or compounding powder or the proanthocyanidins from fruits or a supplement, you're having something that's very natural and positive for the three glands that impact how we feel. Your thymus gland, your pituitary gland, and also your adrenal gland. And that in turn can modulate serotonin. And that in turn can modulate the emotional expression part of our brain, the hippocampal area. So all this is good. So for those who have felt better emotionally when they shifted their diet and started eating fresher foods, more living foods, and supplementing properly, well, there's good science to back it up. Tooth decay. It's epidemic in the United States because we eat so much sugar. And then people don't remember to brush their teeth right after they have a soft drink or a sugary food. Here's the latest on this. The white sweet meat of coconuts is really important because it can help combat tooth decay. Tooth decay is the breakdown of tooth enamel, which is the hard white substance that protects your teeth. And 90% of all Americans over the age of 20 have it. So poor oral health is not taken lightly, because that in turn, if you have infections in your mouth, if you have puffy gums, infected gums, that can cause bacteria and viruses to go to the heart and lead to heart disease. And it can also contribute to diabetes and even a stroke. So here's what we know now. One of the problems facing scientists today is antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Now, antibiotics, which used to be very effective and important, are losing their power against common strains of bacteria. Consequently, many researchers are testing natural ingredients as potential sources. In one such attempt to look at alternate sources, Irish scientists tested coconut oil. They tested various species of Streptococcus bacteria against altered or modified with enzymes in natural coconut oil. They found that enzyme-treated coconut oil inhibited the growth of most Streptococci bacteria, and one in particular was Streptococcus mutans, an acid-producing bacterium that causes tooth decay and cavities. And most of us carry these bad bacteria in our mouth. Now, these findings are not all that surprising in light of previous research. In one particular study, scientists discovered that green coconut water that I talk about on the show regularly, that's great for people with ulcers, it's great for people who are dehydrated, it's terrific if you're out there on a hot day doing a workout, cycling or running or power walking. Well, it has antimicrobial peptides. Those peptides kill bacteria. So coconut extracts have been shown to kill one strain of the herpes virus. And not to mention, coconut oil has antifungal effects. So I suggest it all the time to people who have Candida albicans, a yeast that causes oral thrush and yeast infections. So I think that's more than enough when you compare that to what an antibiotic would do with all the side effects. So I would suggest that coconut oil is important. But a lot of you are already using coconut oil, certainly in this audience. You're using it in your smoothie in the morning. Well, how about just doing this? How about the next time you go to brush your teeth, just put a little coconut oil in your mouth at the same time? Now, that'll work. So adding coconut oil to the mix could potentially make things better for your oral hygiene. And I bet no one knew about that, because that's brand new. Now, many people like organic dairy. And I don't have a problem with that if you're not allergic to it, unless you're a vegan and you decide not to have anything from an animal. But for most people, which is 98% of Americans are not vegan, if you're going to have dairy, cheese, yogurt, kefir, sour cream, cottage cheese, buttermilk, milk, then it's always best to have organic, grass-fed cattle produce the milk. Ideally, if you lived in a state where you could have access to really clean milk, that's the best way of doing it, even non-homogenized milk. Well, Oregon State University did some research where they took dairy cows and fed them flaxseed, and it produced more nutritious milk. Their milk contained more of the omega-3 fatty acids and less saturated fat. Now, we know that diets high in saturated fat increase cholesterol and can cause heart disease. Those rich in the omega-3 and other polyunsaturated fats reduce the risk of heart disease. And traditional cattle feed mixes corn and grains and alfalfa hay and grass silage result in dairy products with low concentration of omega-3 and other polyunsaturated fats. This was published in the Journal of Dairy Science. So now, let's encourage the local farmers, and this can be done on a local basis in Vermont and upstate New York and New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, and all over California where you're listening to this program. Ask your local dairy farmer to feed the cattle the flaxseed, which is very inexpensive. Put it right in their feed, and that'll give you much healthier dairy products. What does the prostate need to thrive if it has cancer? According to the Journal of Clinical Investigations, it needs stress and anxiety. Several recent studies have found that men who take drugs that interfere with the stress hormone adrenaline have a lower incidence of prostate cancer. Well, how about forgetting the drug? How about trying meditation, prayer, journal writing, being in nature, spending more time with your bonded companion pet? So if you're highly stressed, much more likely to have prostate cancer. Now, also, a few more things. A lot of people have problems sleeping. And last evening, when I was writing a commentary, I'm going to be doing a series of commentaries this week, original, that I've written. I wrote them yesterday. It shows that the more we rely upon medications to do something the body would normally do if we rebalanced it, the worse off we are. And there was a commercial that showed that you could get a better night's sleep, but the side effects were death. And you couldn't drive. And you couldn't do a lot of stuff for a period of time. Why would anyone do any drug where death is a side effect? Because then it's not a side effect, it's an effect. This is the latest in the University of California. Here's what it says. poor sleep in old age prevents the brain from storing memories. So how can we have better memories, improve our memory? It's simple. Take 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin an hour before you go to sleep. Take about 800 milligrams of magnesium before you go to sleep. And if you've had repeated bouts of not being able to stay asleep, don't drink any liquid within 2 hours of going to sleep. And then take 5-hydroxytryptophan as directed on the bottle. That'll help you get a good night's sleep. And make sure you got the lights off in the room. And if you need earplugs, wear them. That's all important. One other way that we can help people who are having depression and sleep complaints and even ADHD, it's a simple technique. It's called yoga. We know it's a 5,000-year-old practice, but according to Duke University, yoga has positive effects on mild depression and sleep complaints, even in the absence of drug treatments, and it improves symptoms associated with schizophrenia, ADHD. So that's good. This was published in Frontiers in Psychiatry. And another energy therapy that came over from the Orient is called Qigong, Q-I-G-O-N-G. What does it do? According to Science Daily, research at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, it improves the quality of life of breast cancer patients. Now, this is an ancient mind-body practice. And the study was published in the journal Cancer, and it was the first to examine Qigong in patients actively receiving radiation therapy and included a follow-up period to assess benefits over a period of time. Quote, "We were also particularly interested to see if Qigong would benefit patients experiencing depressive symptoms at the start of treatment." This is the professor at MD Anderson's Department of General Oncology and Behavioral Science. "It is important for cancer patients to manage their stress because it can have a profoundly negative effect on biological symptoms and inflammatory profiles." And they found that it did benefit. Interesting, because for a long time, if you suggested that one person could impact the energy of another person by rebalancing their chi, their life force energy, this was called nonsense, quackery. The same was true with acupressure, same was true with homeopathy, same was true with Qigong. Same was true with yoga and meditation. Well, now that we've had about 40 years of research, they were all wrong, and we were right. So all the millions of people who have been using these, the yoga, the meditation, prayer, we were all right. So just remember this the next time one of these people who's been consistently wrong, or one of those advocates who go out there and attack people who want to do these therapies, is delusional. Just remember, you got it wrong the first time. I'm not going to trust you a second time. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm going to quote a comment. The article's entitled, "America Can Be a Scary Place for Americans," by Tony Samani of the Salem News in San Diego. Here's what she says, and we're posting this on the website. "We are a nation of rules and laws, with over 40,000 new laws that went into effect January 1, 2012 alone. With such a minefield, even for the most sober citizen, it's easy to slide down the rabbit hole, not see a construction zone sign. It could cost you dearly. Overdrawn on the bank? Well, there are fees and penalties. Recently in Oklahoma, there was a 21-car pileup on an icy street, and every driver received a $252 ticket. Larissa Nearing's story is a poignant illustration of what can happen when you're busy living your life. On November 3rd, Larissa began what seemed like a routine day. She had taken her baby to daycare in the morning and then went to work. Around noon, she got an urgent phone call from a neighbor who said her apartment was on fire. She rushed home to find the firefighters wrapping up and learning that the apartment above hers was where the fire originated. She saw from her doorway all of her worldly goods. Many of the items had been wrapped in plastic by the fire department, but she noticed her speakers for her DJ business were not protected. She tried to enter her apartment since the fire was out, and police officers were standing inside her apartment talking. She was prevented from entering, and so she asked if they would please protect her speakers. Larissa explained she had a DJ business, and this equipment was vital to her livelihood. There was one officer, Scott Crane, who ignored her pleas for help. She says she never was hostile to the officer, but was just frantic to get her possessions protected from further damage. After several attempts to reason with the officer, she said he spun her around and stated, "You're under arrest for obstruction of justice." He then proceeded to take her to the back alley, away from the neighbors and witnesses. But the media, about five TV stations, and even more news reporters showed up while Larissa was being handcuffed. She kept asking, "Why are you arresting me? What have I done wrong? Why don't you help me? My equipment is worth $20,000. That's my business. Why are you doing this?" Because of her upbringing, she knew not to lose her cool and not to use any language toward the officer that would be deemed inflammatory, such as swearing at him. She knew she should not be getting arrested. "Don't hit him. Don't swear. Don't do anything," was the mantra riding in her mind. It seemed the more controlled Larissa was, the angrier the officer became. He was rough, and at one point, her breast came out of her dress and was exposed. Mercifully, another officer came to her rescue and covered her up. Then Officer Crane threw her in the back of the police cruiser. The media was capturing everything on film. "When he put me in the cruiser, he pulled some marijuana out of the trunk and started waving it around. 'Is this yours? If it is, you're going away for a long time.' She responded that she was 100% legal and possessed a medical marijuana card issued by the state of California. She had moved to California in order to be legally compliant, as she had suffered a severe car injury, and marijuana was the safest and best way to ease her pain. He laughed at her. Later she learned that the San Diego Police Department officers exaggerated on camera the amount that they found. One officer extended his arms outward, suggesting a huge amount of pot. When this accusation was made, she lost her job. The reality was she only had a small amount, well within the legal limits of California law. Unfortunately, a false accusation has the same repercussions as a true one. Employers don't care to check out the veracity of these charges. You are guilty, even if proven innocent. The officer took her to the booking area and left her in the squad car. It was warm, Southern California day, around 80 degrees, and she asked to have the window cracked for some air. This request was ignored. Over a period of 5 hours, she was kept in the back seat of the car, handcuffed, and on several occasions, different officers came out to urge her to talk. She had asked for an attorney, but that request, too, was denied. One officer had the audacity to suggest that Larissa, to keep your legs closed and be a mother. Finally, when the arresting officer returns, she is confident that she'll be released, only to learn that a new charge has been added, child endangerment. How can that be? There's no child endangerment, especially since her son was at daycare at the time. At that point, Larissa started to cry and begged the officer to release her one-year-old son to family members living in the area. The officer started laughing at her and said, "No, he's going to go to a children's home." The arresting officer, Scott Crane, that's C-R-A-N-E, went off duty, and a replacement came and took her out of the cruiser and started explaining to her what was going to happen to her and her son. He explained that someone would be going to get her son and take him to a state's children's home. Since she isn't acting like Officer Crane had said that he offered to help her retrieve some vital phone numbers to make some calls. The arresting officer told his fellow officers that Larissa was acting crazy and abusive. Apparently, the two officers' reports contradicted themselves. In one report, the police officer said that Larissa was arrested because she ran into a burning building, and he feared for her life, and he tried to help her and ended up having to arrest her and detain her to save her life. And in the other report, he stated that she was so abusive with her language and she was verbally assaulting him. There were at least five different cameras rolling at the time of the arrest, and there was no evidence found where Larissa had been verbally abusive or cursing the officer, and there was no fire when she got there. So the officer was wrong. She was booked on a felony child endangerment charge with $100,000 bail. She lost it when she realized she wasn't going to get out of jail anytime soon. Next, they took her DNA because of the felony charge. This was permanently entered into an ever-growing database. Even if the charges were later dropped, you can't erase any of that. Though she was arrested around 12 p.m., it took until 2 a.m. the following day before finally being booked. She believes this was done on purpose in order to have her sit in jail until the next Monday. The bail amount was too high for her to meet. Unbeknownst to her, bail had been reduced to $10,000 the following day, but she was never notified. She sat in jail needlessly. No doubt this was bad for her, but the real injury was to her one-year-old child who had been without her mother. What about the psychological damage done to this poor innocent? Larissa spent 5 days in jail. The arresting officer charged her with five counts, one of child endangerment, child neglect. But when she finally was brought before the judge, the only charge that stuck was a misdemeanor, obstruction, and she was released on her own recognizance. While she was in prison, her child was tested for drugs and found to be drug-free. A friend of a friend was a former district attorney and came to represent Larissa pro bono because he thought this shouldn't be happening to her. She had been told by child welfare services that once she got out of jail, she would be able to see her child. But when she was released, the nightmare continued. A restraining order had been placed on her so she couldn't even see her own baby. Larissa was about to get schooled in the world of juvenile court. Juvenile court operates under the preponderance of evidence. Guilt is not beyond any reasonable doubt. The judge only need believe 51% of the evidence is true in order to convict someone. Larissa went to the detention hearing on Tuesday morning, fully expecting to be leaving with her baby. She thought since all charges were dropped except for a misdemeanor obstruction, it would be an automatic return of her child. She walked into the courtroom thinking that they would say, "Here I am," and be giving back her child. Instead, the judge decided Larissa was a bad parent and started the adoption proceedings. You heard me correct. Now they were going to give away her baby. He disregarded the fact that her son tested negative for any drugs or illegal substances. The court-appointed attorney volunteered her for rehab, and Larissa said, "Excuse me, don't volunteer me for rehab. I want my baby back." She kept firing her court-appointed attorney on the record, and the judge asked the attorney, "Are you having a problem with your client?" The judge said that they would set a date to come back in a month to discuss the case, and Larissa respectfully yet firmly said, "No, I want my baby back." The court-appointed attorney said that that was her only option, and he kept saying to her, "You can't fire me." When the original charges were dropped and never made it past the district attorney's office, apparently the child welfare services did not care. So even though she now was completely cleared of everything, it seems that Larissa's one-year-old son was being offered for adoption from the first day he was taken and placed into the system, even though the original charges of possession and sales, being under the influence and child endangerment, were immediately dropped. No one bothered to inform child welfare services. The accusations of these crimes is apparently what the child welfare service went with, and they didn't bother to check out if the charges were legitimate. One of the charges was for neglect because she hadn't vaccinated her son. in California, you don't have to have vaccinate for personal, religious, or philosophical beliefs. She didn't vaccinate because of her beliefs. The attorney said that she had to vaccinate him. Quote, "You don't understand how they are. If you don't do what they want you to do, you'll never see your child again." He threatened her. Her child was forcibly vaccinated against her will. He got 8 shots in one day, 1 year old. While under state care, they had to take her son to the emergency room twice because of the vaccines. In his mother's protective custody, he had never required emergency care, even though Larissa provided a very stable and safe home for her son. Studies suggest that children fare better, even in a troubled home, over foster care. Reminiscent of the Salem witch trials, it doesn't matter how good a parent you are. All it takes is one official person to accuse you. The ramifications still rise up even today. A year later, people read the initial story. Family and strangers alike readily believe the charges because they think the officers are infallible. Larissa lost her job. She lost her home. She lost her baby for a period of time. She lost her reputation, her dignity, her money, and her family in a matter of minutes. And she still carries the stigma, even now, when she applies for jobs. The arresting officer not only put her son's life in a horrible position, he also further punished her by issuing a citation, suspending her driver's license. He turned her over to the Department of Motor Vehicles in the attempt to permanently revoke her license because he said that she was a drug addict. A year later, Larissa still shakes with fear, reflecting back on these events. When trying to get her driver's license restored, the doctor at the Department of Motor Vehicles couldn't believe why she was being stripped of her license. Anyhow, the story goes on. So just remember that next time you are on the other end of an official, militarized, completely protected police officer, just remember what we become as a nation. That happened to her. It could happen to you. Now to my guest, who is standing by. Let's go over and say hello to Gar Smith in Berkeley. Gar is the editor emeritus of Earth Island Journal, which has been recognized on many occasions among the top environmental publications. He is also the co-founder of Environmentalists Against War and is an awardee from the Project Censored. In the past, Gar has covered revolutions in Central America and environmental campaigns on 3 continents. He is the author of Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth, with a foreword by Jerry Mander, who we had on last week, from the International Forum on Globalization. Nice to have you with us today, Gar.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for the invitation.
Gar, I'm going to ask you a series of questions and then stay quiet and have you give us your answers, all right?
Fine.
First, an overstatement. I am of the belief that the Japanese government, as official position, has conspired to downplay the significance of the Fukushima disaster, has altered information to make it look better than what it is, and is incapable of protecting its citizens from the 24/7 release of radiation from Fukushima. Most people are under this misguided impression that as long as you live a certain mileage away from a nuclear accident, that you're safe. I am under a different impression that the laws of physics have not yet been written that stop radiation in the wind from blowing in all directions because of a signature number, 10 miles from Indian Point on the Hudson River, or 23 miles from Fukushima, and that every single day that the radiation is emanating from there, it puts more and more people at risk. Those are my concerns. That said, I'd like for you to go through what you now know, having been one of the lead people in the world on Fukushima, and give us an update on the health problems being observed, particularly among children and the elderly, and the radioactive waste from the damaged reactor that contains even now more radiation, the temperatures at some of the radiations, which are still rising, and just a massive buildup of radioactive waste and the problem of storage since TEPCO and Japan's nuclear authorities are unable to construct storage tanks fast enough to store the tons of waste water that's accumulating. Go through this in some detail, all right?
That's quite a feast of questions. It's certainly true that the Japanese government conspired with the regulators and industry to cover up and downplay what happened in Fukushima, but it's well worth noting that this is not something that is unique to the Japanese government. We've seen it in the situation with Chernobyl, with Three Mile Island, and it's not much different in the United States. The NRC is more an enabler than it is a watchdog, and we continue to see increasing evidence of that. Not only in the exposés of the Associated Press last year, which went through 11,000 documents and found that the NRC was intentionally fudging safety requirements to allow these reactors that would otherwise be failing to continue to operate. This is continuing today, where the NRC is supposedly trying to introduce some post-Fukushima safety requirements. But of the three major requirements that the Japan government has enforced, the NRC has only proposed adopting one of them and is now backing down under the pressure of pro-nuclear Republican politicians who think that this correction is too burdensome, i.e. too costly for the industry. Specifically, the one correction that has been proposed for U.S. reactors, and we do have 23 identical Fukushima-style Mark I reactors located 16 sites in 12 American states. And we have to remember, you know, when you have three similar reactors in Japan breaking down, losing their power, overheating, cracking their tops, exploding, spreading fallout around the neighborhood, when you have three of those happen one after another, it's not a coincidence. Those reactors were not only designed to create a lot of heat to boil water, but they were also inadvertently designed to explode when they overheat. So that's what we're faced with in the United States. In Japan, we are looking at what could be our destiny. Any country that has a nuclear power plant, especially boiling water, especially these Mark IIIs and Mark IIs, has a potential of experiencing what is still happening in Japan and will be going on for decades. The cleanup is estimated to take 30 years. It's estimated to cost $250 billion. Going into any nuclear discussion, the ballpark figures are always lowballed. The costs always rise. In Japan, we knew very quickly within 3 months that the children living near the Fukushima plant were suffering thyroid cysts and tumors, 33%. A year later, the figures had gone up. Children in Tokyo were getting cysts in their thyroids. That's quite a distance from Fukushima. The kids in Fukushima late last year study looked at kids from 5 to 18 and found that the number of cancerous thyroid tumors had increased more than 40 to 45% of the population that was surveyed. At the same time, you have teenagers working in the cleanup process. The cleanup process of the reactors is a very slow, arduous, and dangerous proposition. They're doing something that they've never been trained to do. They're trying to make it up as they go along. A couple of weeks ago, trying to clean up the debris around the number two reactor, the plant workers accidentally dropped a metal beam into the reactor pool. In order to safely retrieve this, they had to build a mock-up and practice with this mock-up before they went to the real thing. Some of the reactors are so, well, all of the reactors that suffered meltdowns, three reactors with major meltdowns. The Unit 1 reactor not only melted down, but the core, the molten core, breached the reactor containment vessel and spilled onto the floor of the containment building. The only way that they can assess the damage inside these structures is using robots. The initial robots they put in there couldn't take the heat. They're now trying to build a new generation of robots that are capable of staying inside the plant long enough to try to figure out what's going wrong so they can try to control it. There was a major earthquake in December. It caused a pressure increase in another reactor, an undamaged reactor at a sister site nearby. the earthquakes are going to continue to roil Japan. All the reactors are shut down except for two that were reopened at the Oie plant, and those, we now know, are built on top of an earthquake fault that may be active. Many of the reactors in Japan are built on active earthquake faults. In the United States, we have 27 reactors that are built in areas that the NRC now considers to be at risk of seismic damage. In seven of those cases, five of those cases, the reactors are also Fukushima-style reactors located up dangerous seismic zones. These should be targets for quick shutdown. Also, any reactors that we have on the coasts and along water basins are also at risk. The situation for the people in Japan, the health situation, is just appalling. The government's response, this is indicative. When Tokyo schoolyards were discovered to be contaminated, the water in the schoolyards, the drinking water, the playgrounds, with fallout from the Fukushima plant, the government's response was to solve the problem by changing the permissible level of radiation. They jocked it up 20 times. This was so appalling to the government's own radiation safety advisor that he resigned in disgust. Last July, 2012, a Stanford study concluded that contamination from iodine-131 and cesium-137 would have been 10 times worse for the people of Japan if the wind hadn't been blowing to the west. It blew 81% of the airborne fallout over the Pacific Ocean. The Stanford study has gone on to predict that this will cause as many as 2,500 cancer cases, mostly in Japan, but also as far away as the U.S., because that's where the wind blew the radiation fallout. In January of this year, there's a new study that's estimating the cancer deaths from fallout in Japan will be 8 times greater than previously believed. This is in part because the previous studies neglected to factor in the effects of ground shine, and this is a word that we're all going to have to become familiar with. This is the impact of exposure to radiation rising up from the ground, not just falling out of the air or in the food and water. And this is a particular interest to parents whose kids happen to grow up closer to the ground. There have been tours of doctors that have gone to Fukushima to assess the situation. In November last year, a team of foreign doctors reported that conditions were even worse than they had anticipated. Quote, "The symptoms are always the same: nosebleeds, skin disease, diarrhea, respiratory diseases, pains at the rear of the ears, stomachs, as well as thyroid disorders. These are all classic examples of radiation poisoning." In December of last year, the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War went to Fukushima, and they reported that the Tokyo government and the World Health Organization had underreported the radiation risks to human health by relying on exposure estimates that were provided by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which, of course, is a pro-nuclear institution. The government has tried to reassure the public. Initially, they wouldn't provide any information at all. Then, under pressure, they started providing misleading information. And they are now claiming that they have installed radiation-detecting devices. Greenpeace went over and took a look at what the government was doing. Sure enough, they had installed radiation devices, but what they did first was they cleared the area around the installation site of contamination and then installed the monitors. The Greenpeace inspectors found that if you took 40 steps in any direction, the radiation would once again spike higher than what the monitors were showing. We've also subsequently found out that many of the radiation-detecting monitors, as they are designed, they perform less efficiently than the international standards and show radiation levels that are 40% less than you'd otherwise find if you used an internationally approved radiation monitor.
Okay. Lots of good information for us, Gar. One final question. Many of us believe that there is a pending nuclear disaster at San Onofre Reactor in Southern California due to recent generator failure and a radiation leak and inability to fully operate at standards that are supposed to be done. And since one of our sister stations, KPFK, and people are listening now from KPFK, live in that immediate area, could you bring us up to date on the San Onofre?
Yeah, the San Onofre plant has experienced radiation leaks and steam generator tubing failures attributable, as we found out, to the perfidy of the operators, Southern California Gas and Electric, and the Edison folks, managed to save some money by ordering new steam generators from Japanese manufacturers by telling the NRC that they were going to be identical to the ones that they were replacing. If they're identical, same as, that means that there's no need for the NRC to intervene and no need for the operators to make any special presentation about changes. Well, in fact, there were changes. Changes were made in an attempt to increase the efficiency of the operation.
Gar, we're having a little technical glitch. Sorry. We will continue on. I appreciate the information you've given us. Again, Gar Smith, my guest. Sorry that he's falling out now on that end. Nuclear Roulette is the book that he is the author of, and his website. Well, I don't have the website. What is your website, Gar?
Environmentalists Against War.
Oh, no,
war.
You're back on. You're okay now, so go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay. The San Onofre situation is not resolved. The NRC has closed the plant down. The plants can't operate safely. What the operators hope to do is to get permission from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to run one of the plants, one of the two reactors down there, at 70% power for 5 months, essentially to see if it's safe to do so.
Okay.
This is incredible chutzpah on the part of these operators. First, having lied to the NRC about the redesign of the steam generators, which led to a breakdown of the operations, which triggered a release of radioactive gases, they have the audacity to try to save their investment by trying to operate it at a sub-maximum performance level. There's no way that one can rationally argue that this plant should be allowed to operate ever again. Similar, it's a companion plant. Those plants should be considered dead in the water. And what we have to think about more and more in this country and around the world is not about making these plants run longer and see if they can run safe and see if we can solve the waste storage problem. We have to start thinking about decommissioning these things. As expensive as it is to decommission, and the NRC estimates it would take 10 years and $1 billion to dismantle and decommission one of these plants. The operators in the field are now saying it's going to take $2 billion in 10 years. But as costly and difficult as that's going to be, think of what happens when you've got a Fukushima disaster. We'll be facing the people and are going to be
Gar,
facing
unfortunately, the technical glitches still there. We appreciate your input very much. Thank you for all your good work.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, it's time for Talk Back. You can call in now and share your points of view at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And also, I'm going to give you our new number. Tens of thousands of people have called to listen to the program from anywhere. The good news is you can listen to this program on your telephone. You don't have to be by a radio. You don't have to be at a computer. The number is 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Got a powerful program this evening, 7 o'clock on Progressive Commentary Hour. Won't want to miss that. It is a phenomenal program. Now, I promised that before we take your calls, but call in now, I would give you some absolute information that for the people who haven't thought about this angle, maybe you thought about we don't need the automatic weapons or whatever your position is, pro or con on that. That's your position, and there are merits on both sides. But we've always had weapons. We've not always had mass killings. Everyone had guns where I grew up, and there were no mass killings ever. Not in my lifetime, not in my father's lifetime, not in my older brother's lifetime. Why so many in such recent years? All of these people were on psychiatric meds. These were all school shootings. I'm only going to give you school shootings. We had in 6 dead, 15 wounded. This is in February 15, 2008 in Illinois, Prozac withdrawal. in Minnesota, 10 dead, 7 wounded. On 2005, on March 24th, Prozac antidepressant, the person was on. Pennsylvania, we had a 14-year-old girl shoots and wounds students on in 2001. She was on Paxil. Then in Alabama, 14-year-old kills fellow students, was on Zoloft. And that was in 2011. 1995 in South Carolina, Zoloft, a shooting in a school. In 2009 in Germany, 16 dead, including the shooter, was on different medications for depression. In France, 17-year-old killed was on meds for depression. In Texas, 2008, was withdrawing from antidepressant meds and went to school. These are all school shootings. In 1998 in Illinois, same. It was on antidepressants. 1999, in Colorado, we had Columbine, 15 dead. Luvox and Zoloft, they were on. And by the way, I filmed all the people involved that would speak with us, which was dozens. They all said the same thing. They were normal kids until they went on the meds. That is important to remember. That you never hear. In 2001 in Japan, 8 dead on antidepressants. 1998 in Oregon, 4 dead on Prozac and withdrawing. In Washington, this was in 2011, on meds, school stabbing. In 2006, antidepressants, school shooting in Colorado. 2001, meds for depression in Pennsylvania. Attacked 11 kids, 3 killed. In Florida, in 1993, was on Luvox. In 2009, in New York, a man got inside a gun with his, inside of a school with a gun, was on antidepressant and was withdrawing. In Texas, 1992, on antidepressant shooting. And 2010, in Finland, that was a major killing, was on the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Another school shooting, man was on meds, 2004 in New Jersey, 2007 in Virginia. All these were on antidepressants. In Australia, was on Zoloft. And California, in 2009, Michigan, 1992, Virginia, 2010, New York, again, all on meds. Wellbutrin, Lexapro, Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, Effexor, and Selexia, California, Virginia, Indiana, New York, North Carolina, Washington, Tennessee, Idaho, Wisconsin, all on meds. I have a list of over 90 individuals who went into schools. I'm only referring to school shootings. There are a whole nother group that committed crimes outside of school. All of these school shootings, all of the individuals, without exception, were on similar medications. Why isn't anyone paying attention to that data? I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey. Your turn.
Thanks, Gary. I'd like to talk about the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant located on the West Coast as well. Here in California, we're always told that the big one's coming. We're always told to put food and water aside, and that's a 0.9 magnitude earthquake about that. It's called a megathrust earthquake, and the plant, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, is only built to withstand a 7.5 shaker, and we know that the polar caps are melting, and because of that, there's shifting in the tectonic plates, so we're getting bigger and bigger earthquakes. And not long up the coast in California, they had a 7.7 and earthquake, and so that's the biggest earthquake they've had in the British Columbia area for decades. So the thing is that we're becoming more seismically active, and it turns out that the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is sitting in front of the California Central Growing Valley, where 25% of the food that feeds America comes from, and if that food becomes contaminated with nuclear materials, no one's going to buy it. Plus, plus the water for about 25 million Californians flows from the Sierras through the Central Valley into cities all from L.A., from San Francisco down to Fresno, and no one's going to drink radioactive water. And it turns out that the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is built in the Ring of Fire. There's 13 known fault systems that are around the plant, and it sits on a fault. The Diablo Canyon sits on what they call the Diablo Cove Fault, which runs off to the offshore. It's called the Shoreline Fault. It's connected a mile away, which is connected possibly to the Hasgari Fault, which is connected to the San Andreas Fault. They're all connected, and one shaker on one could actually just rip that plant up. So there's so many reasons, but essentially it would stop all the north-south traffic in California if there was a nuclear explosion. It would just destroy California and destroy America, I believe. So I'm calling for them to close the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant.
Well, I agree with you. We're out of time for our regular show. Harvey, why don't you do this? You're at Berkeley in California. Why don't you start a campaign? You can use Knocking on the Devil's Door, our documentary about nuclear power and its fallacies, and use that, make copies and give it to students, to have screenings. Look at the papers we have posted online by Harvey Wasserman and all the other, and Helen Collicott, Michio Kaku. And let's see if we can't close down Diablo Plant, okay? All the best to you. For all of you listening on our regular stations, we thank you very much and look forward to sharing more tomorrow. For those of you who continue to listen on the Internet, we will continue. Let us say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I'm telling you, I hope people weren't eating their lunch while they were listening to this, because they're going to be sick to their stomach. Amazing information. I have an email here from Marissa. She said, I was recently at your wonderful, inspiring, and for me a life-changing lecture called The Cure for Everything. My husband and I were wondering how in the world you would keep such a giant audience in a civic auditorium. She said that they were in the thousands. When from where we were sitting, we can hardly even see you. Yet we stayed for all four lectures. She says, I didn't count them up, but I'm pretty sure I had about 40 pages of notes when I left. She said, my mom died of breast cancer, and my sister had breast cancer, and needless to say, I'm concerned. And I've been a supporter of all the pink ribbon walks for breast cancer campaigns for more than 10 to 12 years. Yet everything you told us contradicts what the breast cancer awareness movement speaks to. So she says, I'm having friends listen to your program. If you address this issue, I will share it with them. They're all part of this pink ribbon breast cancer awareness campaign.
I am completely opposed to the historic breast cancer campaign. I am completely supportive of the original 1970s feminist movement led by the physicians and scientists and activists to look at the actual causes of breast cancer. That's when we began to look through the prism of Rachel Carson at environmental toxins, at endocrine disruptors such as DDT, and then looking at biphenyl products that also disrupt the hormones in the body. Pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, all are carcinogenic. And there's an instance of breast cancer when people are exposed to those. There was a big movement in the 1970s, 80s to get women who worked in any form of environment where environmental toxins were known to be carcinogenic to have greater safety standards. But nothing was done for all the millions of women who had worked in industries, in factories, arum processing plants that had been exposed to environmental toxins before then. And as a result, that's where the direction should have gone. Then in the late 1970s, mainly due to the work of Dr. Samuel Epstein, and without question the country's most leading authority on mammography, he said that one single mammogram can cause breast cancer later in life. And yet there was an enormous movement to get more women to get mammograms. And that really took full force when the worst thing that could happen to the women's movement, at least the health movement, was when you combined a serious health issue, breast cancer, with corporate interest. And that's where you came up with the breast cancer culture or the pink ribbon campaign, which is a complete fraud. Not the women who are walking, biking, racing. They're simply truly wanting to see an end to it, thinking that the more money they raise, that in turn will go to finding cures. But the whole emphasis is upon the cure. It's what were the terms they used? Connect, communicate, and conquer. Connect with whom? They're connecting corporate sponsors like Kentucky Fried Chicken that causes inflammatory reactions in the body. Well, the last thing you want if you want to prevent breast cancer is inflammation with a meat product. Or the dairy people, especially the dairy people who created the bovine growth hormone that is known to be a hormone-disrupting chemical and increasing the risk of breast cancer. But interesting, they're both sponsors of the, you know, the pink ribbon campaigns. So you have dairy, alcohol, and cosmetic companies, corporate companies like Estee Lauder, that control or direct a lot of money towards these campaigns so that when you go to one of these walks, pay attention. Who's giving you out your drinks? Who's giving you your cups of yogurt? Who's giving you some cosmetic? The corporations are identifying their sponsorship of a blue ribbon campaign, just like the National Football League. What's it going to do? Do you think a single person's life will be saved because every athlete wears something pink? Not at all. Do you think it's all about selling product? It's about associating a product with a cause. That's perfect marketing campaign. And then they call it their sisterhood. This is not a sisterhood. You know, this is anti-feminist. And when you consider that nearly 60,000 women die of breast cancer each year, and you realize that everything is corporately sponsored and there's cross-marketing, and then you realize that a major company, a company, for example, like big chemical companies, big energy companies, big pharma companies, will create a product that causes cancer and then sell a drug to treat cancer. And then they'll have their people on the board of directors of the different blue ribbon campaigns for preventing breast cancer. Yet there's not a penny spent on prevention from these groups. To the contrary, all they'll tell you is, you know, smoking is bad. And so, well, that's about, you know, an old comment. Why don't you talk about red meat's bad? Why don't you talk about eating fried foods bad and can cause cancer? Alcohol in any amount can cause cancer because it causes inflammation of the cells and destroys cells. What about electromagnetic pulses out of cell phones and computers? How about the pesticides you use on your lawns, around the golf courses? How about stress? How about all the cosmetics that people are putting on their body that the majority of the ingredients haven't been tested for cancer, never been tested in combination, and most products a woman uses are combination products. The average woman in America, Luann, uses 12 different cosmetics a day, and each one of those has about anywhere from 8 to 15 different ingredients. That's a good way to get cancer in your body. And yet, who are the two biggest cosmetic sponsors of the Pink Ribbon campaign? Avon and Estee Lauder. You see, it's all based upon the precautionary principle. If anything should cause cancer, always err on the precautionary side. Don't use it. And yet they do just the opposite. Only 4% of the budget of the National Cancer Institute for Prevention. And they'll keep saying, we don't know what causes it. Well, we do. We know what causes cancer, at least 95%. And the last thing they should do is promote mammography. It causes cancer. And also, their logic is foolish because 25% of all breast cancers, 75% of all women who get breast cancer don't have any of their risk factors. So the majority of women getting breast cancer wouldn't benefit from their information. And the worst culprit of all is the Susan B. Collin Foundation. It's doled out about $2 billion since 1982. And now Zeneca gets into it in 2001. and then they partner up. All this is, it's just about, it is about corporatizing and profiting off disease by making women feel that you're inherently going to have a risk of cancer because you have breast. Well, let me tell you something. Having breast does not preordain you to having breast cancer. Wrong choices cumulatively will. And these people are the worst. They don't look at any alternative therapy, and it's all about corporations and sponsorship. And nothing is about alternative treatments or preventions. So I'm opposed to it, as are all the feminists I know who want the women in this country educated about what really causes cancer so they can not get it in their system, they can prevent it, and then looking at the most natural ways of dealing with it. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Let's say hello now to Eutrice Lead, who's standing by. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you today?
Doing great. What do you
well,
have
Well, we're
today?
Talking about Hillary getting rehabbed.
Good. You going to be our counselor?
Yeah. No, she had a counselor just yesterday, a counselor at law and her own personal counselor at the same time.
Eutrice, it was so blatantly obvious that she became Secretary of State in order to fill in her resume so she could be the next president.
Oh, God.
And how and it is disgusting. All they have to is go back and look at her record, but they won't look at what she did when she was the wife of Bill Clinton. They won't look at anything. They'll just look at her as being, we want a woman for president. Yeah. Why don't we have a good person for president? I don't care what they are, what their background, what their age, what their race, their religious views, just have the best person. And yet those are the people we're not even looking at. We look forward to hearing from you now.
Thank you.
Eutrice Lead, right now on Progressive Radio Network.